All right, hi, so my name's Andy Bissett.
I'm James Allen.
And this is the Ball Chat Sports Podcast.
Yeah, okay, so for the quiz, I'm not sure if you're going to get the first one, but it's current. I think you might get the second one. You should get at least, number three's got a bonus point component. So you should get one of them.
Yeah, because I've only got to beat 3.5. You get 3.5 last week.
You're a lying bastard, yeah. 4.5, knock me down to 4 points. The shithousery begins. It's only week two. There's no room for skullduggery here. I think you'll get number four. And number five sounds like an easy one, but when I went through the answers, it's really not that easy.
I'm disappointed with the ease at which you got them last week. So I think I'm going to like put in some absolute horrible ones next week. It's going to be like, in 1924, who won the 100 meters sprint?
That's my era, and it's all from the All
right, so we're going to start with the preamble ramble. So there's going to be football in fallout. So this is you this week, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Harry Kane trained with Spurs teammates this week for the first time since this whole Man City saga began. I was trying to imagine what the atmosphere would be like when he goes back to the Spurs changing rooms with possibly his tail between his legs. And it got me thinking about other famous incidences of this time. So what springs to mind for you?
Only one. Peter Odemwingie. And for those fans, footy fans, who don't remember this one, he was part of probably the most comic transfer day cock-up ever when he tried to literally force a move to QPR by driving up to London and sitting in his car outside the ground.
It's like, that's pathetic.
It was. So cringeworthy. And like, he was literally refused entry to the ground by the staff because no offer had been made for him. So I can't imagine how awkward that must have been for all the staff involved, like when he had to return back to West Brom and see out his contract. He did end up making some substitute appearances, but the relationship was like severed beyond repair, and he finally made his move to Cardiff.
You know that, and didn't another Baggies player do that as well? There's another, forgetting his name, that's just brought to mind someone else, but I won't.
Yeah, I think something similar's happened, like,
since then?
Yeah.
Yeah, since then. But we've got to keep tabs on my brother-in-law from ex-relationships, innit? Married in Northampton. I was on the Wikipedia page, mate. I saw what was going on.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Right, and obviously, the probably most famous Premier League ones, like, you got the hair dry treatment from Fergie. You got Balotelli upsetting virtually every other manager that he played for. And then the classic Premier League fallout between Bowyer and Kieran Dyer on the pitch that had to be broken up by Villa players.
Bowyer showed him levels on that one, didn't he?
Yeah,
just tore the shirt off his back and all that. But I remember, do you remember in 2010 where the France team exploded at South Africa? I think the guy's name Raymond Dominic, the head coach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they'd had horrible qualifying. I think that was the one where Henry had handballed against Ireland and they'd only just scraped through to the tournament. They got there, drew to Uruguay, lost to Mexico. And at half-time, Anelka just lost ahead with the coach. And then they've sent him home. And then the whole team's rebelled against Dominic. And then at the end of the tournament, he got his marching papers. So the whole... This is after... That 2 years after they got knocked out in the qualifiers. This is only 4 years after, I think, they got to... Did they win the... No, lost against Italy in the final. And this is like... The fallout from this has only just come to an end. In like when they won the last World Cup, isn't it? 2018, before the last one.
Yeah, because the French hate a protest, don't they?
Oh, hatred. They just want to kick off, mate. Stick to cross.
La resistance.
Oh,
That must have got sprouted in the dressing room.
The guillotine, man. The guillotine's out.
But yeah, I'd say that is it. Odemwingie, that has to be one of the biggest fallouts. I can't remember.
You said that the hairdryer treatment from Fergie. Remember he launched a football boot at David Beckham's beautiful face back in the day.
And I think that's the same situation, isn't it? That we're talking about.
I think,
not a literal hairdryer, but I think did that not become known as like the hairdryer treatment? Did it not stem from Fergie?
I think Fergie just loved bollocking people.
Oh, he did.
Him and Roy Keane, combustible. It's amazing they lasted together for so long.
He was a proper headmaster, wasn't he?
Oh, no.
Headmaster,
that's
like,
you know. You need a Maccas on your team, man. Sure.
Finger wagging at the, at the players, like.
Stinking a coffee first thing in the morning.
Oh, right, first, we'll move on to the five things you might have missed. So I'll take the first one. Effectively, the first ever social media created football team are about to make history by reportedly receiving a fee for their esports FIFA player. And for the dads, this is esports is essentially a competition between computer gamers. The team named Hashtag United, who was started by a YouTuber in 2016 and play in the Isthmian League North Division, which I think is like 7th or 8th on the football league pyramid. They got a bloke called Tom Lees, who is widely considered to be one of the best FIFA players in the world and is contractually obligated to Hashtag.
So is this a created player or an actual player?
This is a human being.
A human being?
Yeah.
And this is in esports. So they've leveled up this player on esports.
Well, he's they've signed a contract with him to play FIFA for hashtag United against other teams players. Because it's basically, I can see, you know, in the future, like when Manchester United playing Arsenal on like midday on a Saturday, at the same time, they'll have their contracted esports players playing each other as well on FIFA.
Yeah,
I can see that. Like, and it'll probably get more views on YouTube, the two people playing the virtual FIFA, than it will the actual football.
I'm surprised that's not happening already, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think we're too far away from it. But, you know, hashtag United, obviously they're playing in like eighth tier of English football. I don't know how they've managed to like get this guy. I suppose it's probably because their social media presence, they've managed to sign a contract with this guy. But two teams have made offers believed to be in the region of 50 to 100k, according to Sky Sports. And top level professional FIFA players can make up to 10k a month. And their social media brand makes them appealing to clubs to attract new sponsors. Like, Jim, this still baffles me that kids of today can aspire to be professional gamers and make an actual living from it. Like, imagine me and you playing like Spyro or Crash Team Racing back in the day. You know what I mean? And having the ability to make dough.
Well, I think we missed the boat by about 10 years. I was fanatical back in the day. I could have easily been earning a few quid. I'm a Division 4 FIFA player, let's just put it like that. And with the right incentive, with financial incentive, I could have got a easy level 2s, like Division 2s. But then I'd probably still be fat as fuck, innit? So it's all swings and roundabouts.
you got to take your medicine.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, speaking of cross-pollination in sports, can't believe I just pulled that out of the bag. What a phrase.
Woo!
Former undefeated lightweight UFC champion Khabib Nurmagomedov. The third time of asking. Yeah. He signs a professional football contract with FC Legion Dynamo. They're from the Russian third tier. And he's looking like he wants a sporting outlet post-career, because a lot of people think Khabib's still in his prime and he could easily come back and dust up the lads in the UFC. So he's still training at the American Kickboxing Academy, training all the next line of Russian killers up, but also he's going to start playing up front for these boys. So no fee and no talk of wages yet. It just looks like he wants to put his energies into something, really.
Yeah, obviously he's 32, so he's not, you know, he's probably still got a couple of years left of him, especially playing at that level. I can't imagine it's, I can't imagine it's great, but 30, that's pretty impressive. And I think, but to be fair, for them, it's a great PR stunt for them, isn't it? It's like a bit like Usain Bolt when, was it like Melbourne?
So,
a team in the A-League signed Usain Bolt when he was like 31.
The picture of when they're signing the contract, the club official is looking at the camera like, shit-eating grin on his face, and Khabib is staring across the table at him. Like, that just shows you the difference. Like, no, I mean to play football, mate. Completely serious.
And I do remember seeing a video of him having a knock with some lads. With his lads. It looked all right. Yeah, sweet.
Half decent, but good touch. To be fair, no one's going to want to tackle him, are they? They'll just be getting choked out.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, no one's going to get in his face.
I hope he does well, to be fair. No knee injuries and that.
But how many boxing fans, or like how many UFC fans are going to tune into like that first game?
Everyone in Russia, probably. It's going to be FC Legion. They're going to be smashing it, man. Absolutely. But a bit of a sad note for number 3. Rugby World Cup winner Tetu Kefu stabbed in his Queensland home invasion. So he's the current Tongan head coach as well. So this guy's current, he's a big figure in rugby. Mass people have just come into his house, said, "Give us your car keys." And he's like, nah, refused, obviously. Yeah. His family's coming to help. They've just stabbed him in the belly. He's at a hospital now and he's sweet. But I was just thinking, he's a World Cup winner, man. It's like, you know, Bobby Moore or something getting jacked for his Morris Minor back in the day. It's like, what's the problem?
It's becoming a far too common, like with sports people being sort of like held up at knife point and gun point. It's happened a lot with the Premier League footballers, hasn't it?
Yeah, loads of Liverpool players now have been done over. It's like, obviously, you can't have nice things, can you?
Nah.
You can't have status and wealth without a certain sector of society becoming jealous and wanting to take it out on you. There's nothing protect you from that. The spite of people, it just really made me sad. And some of his family members got hurt in the thing as well, in the attack, in the invasion. I don't know if they got away with the cars or whatever, but speedy recovery to a national hero, man.
Absolutely.
And on to number 4, slightly more lighthearted. It was high drama at the snooker last weekend. So you had a little look at this. So what did you think of it?
Pure theatre. I thought it was brilliant. Like, and snooker can be the most boring sport to watch on TV for me. I honestly had no idea that women were eligible for the men's snooker competitions. I genuinely did not know that. Because like this Rhianne Evans from Dudley, by the way, you know, it's clear to see why she's in this tournament. I mean, she's won 64 women's titles, including a record holding 12 championships, with doing 10 on the spin between 05 and 2014. Obviously, Fallon Sherrock became, she made history becoming the first woman to beat a man at the PDC World Championship a few years ago. So, you know, I generally think we need to see more of this. Like, you know, obviously if women are good enough and they go through qualifying or whatever, let's do that more often, because there's not many sports in which this happens. Obviously, you've got the horse racing where you have men and female jockeys that are in the same race. But generally, sports are segregated by gender, aren't they?
Yeah.
A few of the Olympic sports, no, but like in the sort of like commercially viable like sports that we watch, and snooker and tennis. Tennis, we have mixed doubles, but apart from that, we don't. So how far do you think we are with, like, say, football?
Well, that would be a bit of a mismatch, wouldn't it? I think snooker is a fair playing field, really. Like, Rhiann Evans, she's 12-time world champion. I think the guy's name's Mark Allen. He's ranked 10 in the world for the men's side. But what captivated me more about this, rather than gender in sports, was there's a bit of a needle between them before. Apparently, they split up in 2008 really badly. Haven't really spoken since. Pre-match, she refused to shake his hand. And then she took an early lead. And I was thinking, imagine the pressure.
And apparently he was saying something like, oh, she shouldn't be here kind of thing, like a few years ago. Like, so she must have been fuming. I'm going for that she didn't win, to be fair. That would have been funny.
I'm pleased for him that he managed to regain his composure, because you'd be thinking, you know, a couple of frames down, what am I going to do? Your whole idea of who you are as an athlete, quote unquote, on the snooker. But yeah, fair play. I want to see more. They should have a bracket where it's just exes competing against each other.
That would be pretty funny. So number five, Rwanda's president criticises Arsenal after their defeat to Brentford. Rwanda's government has had a sponsorship deal with the North London club since 2018, and the Visit Rwanda logo is shown on Arsenal shirts. The African country's president, Paul Kagame, tweeted, amongst other things, we must not excuse or accept mediocrity. Not only is he a fan and clearly has sentimental attachment to the situation, but his country has to face the ignominy of being shown on the arm of the shirt. Absolutely good, mate, for this geezer.
Well, if there was ever a team in need of a genocide, it's Arsenal, isn't it? So I think he's the man. Cranky should get Kagame on side. He's an absolute culling of all the dead weight in the team. Well, you can't argue with him, can you? You really can't argue. Which brings us nicely onto the review of the weekend's football, doesn't it? Segways, man. Oh, I'm a good segue.
So, yeah, I mean, we're going to start off with Arsenal, obviously. Friday night, Brentford lost 2-0. Abhorrent, abject defending, strange team selection. They had more debutants in their team than Brentford, which I thought was quite significant, because they're a team that's come up from the Championship. You always expect, like, there's such a big gulf in quality and class between the two.
They get a load
leagues.
Of new lads in, don't they? Yeah.
So you'd expect, right, teams come up, they pre-spend their money from the TV rights and stuff like that, because they're thinking, well, we can spend a bit of money on some quality players. But Brentford didn't, generally. So they've kind of kept their team that they had last year. But we spoke about Brentford a few times on this podcast, and like how like brilliant their recruitment strategy is, their approach to data analytics, and using that in recruitment and using that in trying to formulate their coaching decisions and stuff like that. But moving on to like the team selection as well for Arsenal, is Callum Chambers truly a right back? Is he an out and out wing back? Or,
well, he started off at centre back, didn't he?
Yeah,
like a good few years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember people talking about him in turn. Do you remember when like Phil Jones and Chris Smalling and all those boys came, and they were like, oh, they're the next so-and-so. And Chambers was one of them players. I was like, oh my God, he's the next Tony Adams or something. And it's like, I think he's absolutely average. And there was a time when I thought he wasn't really good enough for Arsenal. And now I think him and Arsenal are at the same level. I don't know if he's a good right back. He definitely weren't good against Brentford. I don't know. The defending all across the board was just
it was
like a leaky ship, wasn't it, man?
Yeah, so, first goal, like, couldn't clear the lines effectively, and then no pressure. And I think that might have been Chambers.
It was, yeah. He got wrong-footed, yeah.
You know, he tried to clear the ball, and then he didn't put enough pressure on, like, after it wasn't cleared up properly. And then the second goal is, like, a long throw. You can't concede long throws in the Premier League.
It's the Rory Delap special, isn't it? We got stung by that back in the day. We're getting stung by it now. It's just, it's easy to criticise Arsenal as being, like, as you've said, like, no backbone, toothless. Like, they're just not, it's as if they're not up for it in terms of getting there first. They don't want to go in for the aggressive 50-50 when the ball's up in the air. And those inches add up over the course of a game. And I think it really cut their attitude, really. There's no urgency. They just think they're going to be able to pass the ball around at this pedestrian pace and just play through teams. And it's just not the way.
Yeah, and I don't think they've got the quality in their team to do it anymore. I can't believe that. I mean, Hector Bellerin, for me, I'd put him first on the team sheet. I can't believe Callum Chambers kept him out, because he's an out-and-out wing-back for me, Bellerin. Do you know what I mean? Gets up and down. He's quick. He can cross the ball. And like,
I'm surprised he's still at Arsenal, to be fair. Like, yeah. He's quality. But,
and you spoke to me about, like, why are Arsenal trying to put balls into the box for a guy that didn't look very tall for me? I'm not sure what his height is, that Balogun. You haven't really got any out-and-out sort of like good players in the air that, you know, target men that you can swing the ball into.
Yeah.
You ain't got a Lukaku, have you?
And that's the outlet. That is every time. That's where they find the most. It's kind of like England at the Euros. That outlet down the left channel. And then they just ping the ball in. But even if you've got Lacazette and Aubameyang playing, which we didn't against Brentford.
Which is unfortunate, like. So yeah. Obviously we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves and start sort of like, you know, being the doomsday guys. But, you know, they are big misses. They're a big part of what Arsenal do and their goal scorers. And to be honest, you did have chances.
Yeah. But also, Lacazette and Aubameyang, they wouldn't have assuaged the defensive lapses that led to the goals. That we still would have conceded them goals. Maybe we would have equalised, or maybe we would have got something out of the game with those striking threats up front. But I wouldn't really see. They were too intense, man. I think Arsenal looked shook by the atmosphere. The stadium was on top. Imagine your first ever Premier League game. You're playing against, even though they're a poor rendition of Arsenal nowadays, still like a certified Premier League team. That's a big scalp for them. They just couldn't deal with it. The Brentford players, did you see that little futsal manoeuvre your one player did, where he had three Arsenal defenders around him and he just like 1, 2, 3 banging
in the box and then put it wide. Yeah.
Playing with confidence, man. The bit between the teeth. Fearless, that is, you know. Yeah. Especially when you consider a lack of top tier experience in that team. But I watched an interesting, is it Tifo IRL video? And the guy was talking about, he called it the dreaded donuts. He's saying basically Arsenal pass it. It's all lateral and back passes until they get down that left flank. And then either Tierney or Bellerin will cross it in. And then they'll either lose the ball, or if they recover it, they go back round again.
So it's essentially, it's not playing through the middle. It's kind of like, yeah, playing round the back, making that U-shape round the back, and then either getting it in the box, or if it's not there, then we go back round all the way around that. Yeah.
And he said that just happens again and again, and there's no penetrative passes. And when you see what...
See, that ain't Arsenal.
Yeah.
Because Arsenal have always been a team that have been good enough to break people down through the middle and play in very small spaces.
Yeah.
1-2s, create triangles in tight areas. You know, the classic goal against Norwich with Aaron Ramsey, where they played that unbelievable football, like 6 passes in a really short space of time, just outside the box.
I think that was Wilshere, you know.
Wilshere? Yeah. I just remember that goal as being like...
It's like amazing.
Like, this is Arsenal. Like, this is what we know Arsenal to be like, but it's just not there anymore.
And even that was like post... dominant Arsenal.
Yeah.
The embers of what could have been.
Yeah.
And now, as you say, the quality's just not there. You got Aubameyang, 32, probably on his way out the door. Lacazette, what is he, 30, 31, something like that. Them two ain't going to save you many points for too much longer. So then you got to look at the next boys, Pepe. He's all right, like, but without the supporting cast. I mean, what about Smith Rowe? What do you think of him?
I think he was probably one of the shining lights of that performance, by the looks of it.
I seen him turn and run at the back line a few times. Was still pretty tame. He didn't look miles above like someone like Odegaard, who's looking to come on like permanent transfer back. So,
yeah, I think he's signed today, yeah.
It's just really lacklustre. We said before, I think Arsenal, if they carry on playing like that, they'll get relegated, man. They will. I don't even think that's a controversial thing to say. If they play like that, man, we've got Chelsea this weekend. Chelsea with Lukaku. Champions League winners.
I mean, you
plus Lukaku.
The bravest man wouldn't put a tenner on Arsenal, would they?
No, and the thing is as well, that's the kind of game, then they'd win and then lose against Norwich. Do you know what I mean? I just don't know what to make of them. Yeah. It would halfway be a relief to go down.
Why didn't Saka start?
I think he was injured.
Maybe not 100% fit.
But that's just reminded me, rated to the Brentford fans, because everyone in the stadium applauded Saka when he came on.
So, yeah.
Except for Leeds, and even Leeds managed to score a banger against United. Arsenal had by far the worst performance on the opening day.
Yeah, I mean, so let's talk about some of the better performances. Obviously, you know, you got the 3 out of the 6 sort of like the top six. And I don't think I'm even including Arsenal in that in my head.
You shouldn't,
anymore.
Man. You shouldn't.
But United looking imperious against Leeds. They got stuff now twice in quick succession. I think they got beat there 5-1 No, wait, was it 5-1 this weekend?
Yeah.
6-2 last year. Pogba with 4 sublime assists. Like, literally all of them, like a knife through
Mate, for
do you
the,
know what I mean?
For the second goal, is it Greenwood's goal? That pass was unbelievable.
Weighted to perfection.
From
man.
His own third. If you did that on FIFA, you'd be like, it's the best moment of my life.
Ain't
it? He just put a Greenwood, to be fair to him.
What a finish. Yeah, yeah.
Two touches, bang, out of his feet. Prime Henry levels.
Even like Bruno Fernandes' first one, where he's like really quick reaction. It was like the ball was quite high up.
Yeah.
And he sort of like played that pass in like to him. He's just, he's absolute pure class.
To be fair, they were raving about that pass. And I like the weight of it. And I like how it cut through the defenders. But it was at a really awkward height for Fernandes, that was. And the way, like you say, he recovered the position, fired it in. Sick, man. And the third goal.
Yeah.
Oh, my. That was, like, unreal. Prime Rooney, I reckon.
Like, he's starting up his own, like, greatest goals, you know, compilation already, isn't he, Bruno Fernandes? After having a Euros that was, you know, particularly underwhelming for a player of his quality, he's just started off with a bang. Pogba, obviously, he's hunting for a new contract. He's only got 12 months left on his deal, so he's probably thinking like, right, I need to pull out all the stops this season and
is it me
impress.
Or does Old Trafford just look like a massive pitch?
It always looks huge. Yeah, and on TV. I don't know what it is in the cameras or whatever. I mean, obviously, they can give or take, don't quote me on this, give or take 10 yards.
Mate, it looks like a runway strip, Old Trafford does.
Maybe. Miss it? I don't know.
When the gap started appearing at the back, there's no way he'd be able to cover that ground if Pogba's threading him through like that. And he finally, for
with
me,
the pace as well,
looked like the player that he is in a France shirt. And I was just thinking, if he carries on playing like that, everyone's in trouble. Everyone's in trouble. Because that version of United, that looked like glory days United.
But what do you do if you're the owners of Manchester United? Like, do you do everything you possibly can to get him to sign a new contract now?
It's tough because I don't think that when players sign big money contract extensions that brings the best out of them, really. They always seem to drop a level once they get the bag.
We spoke about this before, innit?
Yeah.
And I think it will happen. And because he's got 12 months left, you can guarantee he can have an amazing season. And then wherever he goes and signs a 5-year deal, his last big contract for whatever a week, 350 grand a week, You'll probably like start to chill out a bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you would, you know, to be fair, I think that's quite a natural thing to do. Like,
yeah, there's very few players that can ignore those incentives, that feeling of security. But yeah, as we said before with Arsenal, we don't want to get too carried away with the first result of the season. But that is something, you have to be worried about United. And not the same for City, their neighbours, who I would have predicted before a ball was kicked that they'd be defending their title, but not so based on the first result.
Yeah,
season.
Quite interesting, really, because it seems like they're in a bit of a rut when it comes to the striker position. Because Gabriel Fernandes, I don't think Pep's ever really rated him. You know what I mean? The Aguero looks like a glaring miss, and obviously it's a first game of the season, so we don't want to get carried away. Harry Kane is going to be, you know, should he stay or should he go? I don't know.
Dodgy, I thought he was guaranteed gone.
Yeah.
From the talk, and then he's playing golf when he should be at training. Those are all classic signs that someone's on the move. But are they going to, after signing Grealish, are they going to drop another 160 mil on Harry Kane, who's potentially shot one at this point?
I mean, I don't know. It's not, for me, it doesn't feel like a very good like business decision, really, to sign Harry Kane now for that amount of money. Obviously, Chelsea, they look very comfortable on the weekend.
Alonso.
Player, man.
Killing it. Absolutely.
Why isn't he in the Spain squad still?
I have no clue. Absolutely no clue.
He's not that old, is he? Is he like 30 or something?
I couldn't tell you. Off the top of my head.
So that goal he scored on his left foot?
Yeah. Honestly, there are a lot of... I think fans have made a massive difference coming back in. I think the intensity, the amount of goals on match day one, the vibe, the excitement, the pace of the game. I think the crowd has a lot to do with it. And I think home teams, especially at places like Stamford Bridge, like Old Trafford, that are notoriously difficult to go to, I think those kind of teams are getting their confidence back in terms of, right, we're going to hammer everyone here now. So,
can you see Man United, Liverpool, Chelsea, Man City, right? Those four. Can you see any of those losing 4 games this season? More than 4
games? At home
games?
Or just
in general?
Well, we've seen what happened to Liverpool when Virgil van Dijk went out. They were just, you know, all over the place. So there are loads of things that can happen throughout the course of a season that can jeopardise your momentum. But right now, based on that, I think City will lose again. I think Chelsea look ridiculous. If they, and Lukaku hasn't even started for him yet. So.
Yeah, I think that represents fairly good value for Chelsea, just under 100 million. I can't believe we're saying that 100 million is good value for a footballer like nowadays. But he looks twice, three times the player he was when he left sort of United to go to Inter Milan.
And ironically, half the size as well. So.
Yeah, yeah. So he's slimmed down, but probably kept his sort of general muscle mass and his strength, his physicality, his pace.
And his agility and his speed off the mark will have improved.
But now it looks like his first touch and his finishing's improved. So he's, you know, potentially looking at a 15 to 20 goal season for the club.
In 60 games, really. How many games are they playing this season? Come on, he'll be getting one in three for that team.
And you know what? I can see Leicester getting up there again, like into, you know, Jamie Vardy still scoring goals. Like
his goal was unreal. Who's the guy on the right? Was it Ricardo someone? Who megged what's his name with a little flip?
Is he the right back?
Yeah.
Portuguese great ball. Right back, is it?
And then Vardy's got across the near post with the left foot. I mean, I don't want to say luck because he got there. But there was something fortunate about the way that ball went in. You couldn't really plan for that. But he said in his post match interview, "Look, all I've got to do is get into that area and get something on it," and that's what he did. Fair play.
34 years old, and he's still so quick. Like he's a player Arsenal should have signed 3 years ago.
Oh, stop! I hate Arsenal.
I've got all these players in my head that I'm like, he'd be perfect for Arsenal.
I think Leicester would have given him a pretty cushy deal back in the day.
I think they probably did. Yeah.
Liverpool, we didn't touch on them much. They beat Norwich, what was it, 3-0 or 4-1?
3-0. Oh, they always beat Norwich. Like,
I remember
a couple
of seasons ago, they beat them at 5-0 or something on the opening day.
Luis Suarez scored 4 against them once, and then I think he scored a hat trick like the season after. It was just like.
It's just one of their matchups, isn't it? Yeah, it's like United and Leeds, but. Salah looking good again. Firmino back on the score sheet. Van Dijk. Liverpool fans must be blessing themselves and praying to the football gods. You know,
he's probably not even fully like match fit yet, but
just bossing things.
Yeah, he's a great defender. And let's talk about some of the poor starts as well. So, you know, I'd say Villa a fairly underwhelming start against Watford. Like they've just been promoted. They lost. They were 3-0 down at one point.
There was an element of fortune in both of Watford's opening goals. That Sarr got down the right-hand side, but acres of space. Poor defending in both instances in the beginning. But he's got down the right-hand side. He's picked the pass to, what's that guy's name in the middle? Anyway, to the striker in the middle. And he's took his shot first time. It's hit the Villa defender on the chest and bounced right back to him. And then he's finished after that. And then for the second one, Sarr got through again. He's took his shot and it's ricocheted off the defender, then went straight over the keeper. So I felt like Villa... On balancing the game, they probably weren't playing that well. But the two goals, to be 3-0 down was a bit flattering to Watford, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And then obviously a great finish from John McGinn.
Oh, what a goal that was.
Yeah, that ball put across by Nusail and Leon Bailey. Great finish. And then obviously they got the penalty. Danny Ings scored his penalty in the sort of like 97th minute or whatever.
They'll be happy with that for Ings, you know, because for strikers, it's important just to break your duck early, isn't it? And I know it's in a losing effort and I know it was +7 of injury time, but you'll take that all day long, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Get off the mark. And I think he'll score quite a lot of goals this season. Obviously, you've still got Ollie Watkins there, so it's interesting to see how Dean Smith will continue to set Villa up, whether he goes with the sort of like 4-3-3 and just rotate strikers. Whether he, you know, tries to introduce maybe like a back three and go 3-5-2 and get them both playing with each other. Yeah, it would be interesting to see with Villa. But I'm not worried. But I don't think Villa are going to be, like, you know, struggling this season. I think they'll top half.
They'll miss Grealish, obviously. But like you've said before, there's value in solidifying the squad as a whole after you get rid of a player like that. So yeah. I hope they do still. I do like Villa, to be fair. I do like them.
Good win for West Ham away at Newcastle as well. Did you see their goals?
Didn't see any of this, but I thought with the way West Ham finished last season, I mean, this is a great start for them to carry on that momentum. And David Moyes back from the brink. His Old Trafford nightmare is finally over. Fair play to him.
You know what? He's a good coach and he seems to be doing wonders at West Ham. Lots of quality in their team. Mikel Antonio, who, you know, started off in like, you know, the conference and sort of worked his way up, was a right back when he, I think, only up until about 2 or 3 years ago. I can't remember who it was that transformed him. It might have been Moyes. I don't know how long he's been there now. Has he been there for years? Might be. But he's transformed him from a right back to a centre forward and he's just flourished in that position.
When you hear things like that, like Ashley Cole used to be a striker. I think he scored a hat-trick on his Arsenal debut. Ended up as one of the best left-backs in all time for Arsenal and for Chelsea. So, I suppose once you're a new manager and a new setup, you might see things with fresh eyes. Whereas if you're there for a long time, you might think, right, he's in that position.
You pigeonhole footballers. And you do it you do it at the youth level as well. Like, I do it when I'm like coaching, like, you know, 12 and 13 year olds. Like, you'll sort of like look at their, maybe perhaps look at their physical attributes, and you'll like pigeonhole them into positions, and like you make do like this first impression of them, like after you've seen them play for like 10 minutes. Oh, he's a striker.
Yeah.
And I think there's a bit of egotism when it comes to coaching as well. That I know he's a striker. And it's just, it doesn't really work like that. You know what I mean? All players in the Premier League should realistically be able to play in all positions.
Yeah. I mean, give or take.
Yeah.
You don't want to put lads in goal. Like, they don't belong in there.
Old Shearer. He used to be a keeper, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, lovely bit of trivia that is.
We'll move on to the Championship, obviously. That's got started with sort of like three games in now. So, you know, Birmingham started the season with back-to-back clean sheets, but then had that 2-0 loss to Bournemouth last night. I think they were pretty unlucky. I watched a little bit of the game. Tino watched it all. But he was saying, like, generally, they were dominating for, like, 77 minutes. And then, obviously, Bournemouth get the first goal.
You can't listen to Tino, man. Dominating. No, you really... Tino, I love you, kid. Do you know what I mean? But the way he talks about Blues, oh, they're unbelievable, I can't believe it, we're going to the Prem, and it's like they're on the way to a 4-0 drubbing. He's not a reliable source, let's put it that way.
He's a massive optimist, isn't he?
Yeah, it's part of what I love about him, but I ain't listening to his like advice on it.
He's probably had 100 quid on him to go up, hasn't he?
Yeah,
I mean, he was sending me like, oh, they're Blues 14 to 1 to get promoted. I'm like, mate, just don't do it.
You're spending that Galatasaray 5 winnings, aren't you?
Yeah, probably. Stoke result from Saturday, it looks quite good for Blues because they beat Swansea 3-1 on Tuesday night, which is a great result for them, but and then obviously that Bournemouth result last night kind of sours things a little. No team holds a perfect 100% record after two games, which I think is really going to signify sort of like the competitive nature of that league.
Championship's always like that, isn't it? You can never pick a winner. Even when you're halfway through, two-thirds of the way through the season, it's like everything's up for grabs. The playoff spots, even the relegation zone, no one knows what's going
to
happen.
You've got loads of dropouts, haven't you, from the Premier League. So you've got players that perhaps are good enough to be in the Prem, but they're right down there and they're sort of like still on big contracts. And I think that's kind of like... it's kind of a damning indictment of like football, really, because you'll have like players, you'll have lads that are getting paid. Like, what was Zigic on? He was on like 60 grand a week when he was playing for Blues in the Championship, man.
Go on, Zigic. Hate the geezer, but...
big lanky bastard.
Hate him.
Nah, I love him. He's one of my favourite players of all time. Name my chinchilla after him. So, Fulham looked good against Millwall Tuesday night, but nearly threw it away late on. Another trait of the Championship. Coventry and Luton off to surprising strong starts. I keep on getting told by people, Luton are going to have a good season this season. I'm like, are they? Why?
Said that as well,
why? Like, same with Stitch the other day, I told him. And he was like, why? I was like, because people are telling me. To be honest. You know, because they were in the bottom half last year, I think. So I don't know what they've done. Like, I don't know if they signed some good players. Let me know.
Maybe they've hired someone to do their socials and she's like, Luton are looking sick, huh? Hashtagging everywhere.
Fucking levelled up their PR department. Like,
yeah, that's what it sounds like, to be honest.
But all in all, it's looking like it's gearing up to be a thrilling season of unpredictable football in the Championship, as always. I'd be surprised if West Brom and Fulham aren't there again after their yo-yo recent history between the Premier and Championship. But it's becoming a little bit boring, isn't it, man? You know, it's nice. It's refreshing to see Leeds back up there. It's refreshing to see Brentford, who were in League One like 4 or 5 years ago, them getting promoted. We don't want to see West Brom and Fulham getting promoted every season, do we? You know what I mean?
Let's bring some other boys in, man, and have them beat Arsenal 2-0 on the opening day.
So, we've kind of very skimmed over the sort of Prem and Championship. We're going to move on to a little bit of transfer footy chat, obviously, in the sort of like midst of the start of the season. So, Kane. We spoke about him briefly earlier.
Yeah.
Is he going to stay or is he going to go?
I think he's going to stay. If you're City, massive transfer fee. He wasn't that impressive in the Euros. You've just got Grealish. They do need a striker, like you say, but is Pep stacking the midfield and just hoping to bring De Bruyne up? Or they do need a striker, but 160 mil. You can buy 3 or 4 actual world-class players for that. You could even raid up the team like Shakhtar Donetsk or something, do it old school.
The geezer's played 60 games a year for the last, like, 6 years or whatever, 5, 6 years. Like, honestly, if you're going to MOT the geezer, like, it's like an almost pass, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Well, I think Daniel Levy, the chairman at Tottenham, he might have played a blinder here. just priced them out just enough.
He's a good businessman, man. I quite like what Levy's done at Tottenham.
Because think about it, they can, if they sign, how many years has he got left on his contract? Like 2 or 3 years, something
Kane.
Like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
They can rotate him out, and they've had a good start to the season now. Son's still there, smashing it.
He's a great player. Yeah, I'd put him in the top 10 like attacking players in the world, man.
So then it's like, once give him a month off, kind of, let him go on the golf course, have a few martinis, and then just bring him back nice and easy. Then by Christmas, he's firing on all cylinders again. And you've still got your main man. Next year, his valuation's still at around the same. If he still really wants to go, then just let him go, right? He's dragging as many games as possible out of him and keeping his premium up if you can. I think that's not too bad, is it?
So what's going on with Kylian Mbappe?
This is everyone's FIFA dream team, isn't it? Like, as soon as Messi goes there, we've talked about the attacking lineup at PSG, and it just looks ridiculous. But apparently now he wants to go. Why wouldn't you want to play with Messi? Even though it's Messi's, you know, the twilight of his career, why wouldn't you want to be on the training ground with him and look at his habits and all that? Why wouldn't you?
I just think there's so much like sensationalist transfer news out there. It's just like, it's just, a lot of it is just absolute garbage. Like Manchester United, every season, like, they're going to sign this player. Yeah. Like, honestly, they get touted for every like top level player.
But I can see him going to Real Madrid. I can't see him going to Liverpool.
I don't think he'll leave. Not this season.
No. I would stay if I was him, just to like rack up a league title, get the league back, get further in the Champions League, then do the big money moves, because he's still a nipper, isn't he, really?
But there's a few players in that team that potentially might be looking for an out. And surely PSG have to balance some books, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, isn't that just a completely free reign at the bank?
Yeah, just like oil money getting pumped into football.
But what about this? Philip Coutinho to Arsenal.
Sign him.
Sign now. Someone of quality.
Just give him 65 million. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, Alexis Sanchez, like when they, because Barcelona and Arsenal,
they got a nice little link up, haven't they?
They really have. Like, they've got a bit of a, like, a weird partnership, really, haven't they? They've sort of like consistently, Arsenal have consistently farmed all their best players to Barcelona.
Lovely.
And Arsenal have consistently taken Barcelona's sort of like players they want offload.
Yeah, that worked out the best for us with Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah. He had a bit of a talismanic sort of personality at Arsenal, didn't he? You know what I mean?
He was happy to bear the weight of the team on his shoulders. Yeah, and he had enough support around him to do it as well at the time. But
it's a shame he didn't have a few more pieces to the puzzle with him at that time, because they probably would have had a good side.
And then like Fabregas went there, Leb went there, Alex Song went there.
You've sort of intonated like there. Like, what about Aubameyang? As a sort of like part deal for Coutinho,
I'd be happy with that, because he's 32 now. Him and Arteta, from what we're hearing, obviously don't like each other, and I think he's got a limited shelf life anyway. Really, last season he weren't the best. I mean, before that he was looking lethal. Like, I think he scored in the Community Shield against Chelsea at the beginning of last season. I was thinking, that's top quality striking right there. And then he just like, just dove off. So I think his time's pretty much come to an end. And if you're going to get... I mean, you're hoping injuries wouldn't have hindered Coutinho's progress too much. You are taking a massive chance. And the wage bill as well. I think that's what will stop them doing it.
Yeah, potentially. There always seems to be some kind of spanner in the works when it comes to Arsenal making sort of like transfer decisions. But I think if Coutinho, he's still not very old either. If he can sort of return to that form he had at Liverpool... He's had a bit of a nightmare at Barcelona, to be honest.
I think loads of players go to either Real Madrid and Barcelona, and then just their worlds fall apart. It happens to loads and loads of players. I don't know what that is, but
I think it's kind of like when you're the sort of big fish in the small pond of teams. I say Liverpool's not particularly a small pond, but he was their best player. When you go from being the star man of a team and you've sort of got that dressing room unlocked, and like all the players are looking up to you as being the sort of like, you know, the star player of the team. Then you move to Barcelona or Real Madrid, where it's full of star players. I suppose it's difficult to adjust, like socially mainly. Not like, it's not all about like the sort of like technical attributes you have as a player. It's about like, how do you integrate yourself into a team that's full of like egos and full of all this like all these quality players. And I think that becomes a bit of a, you know, a socialistic problem for a lot of players to solve, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you can't just be like Ronaldo and just walk into every dressing room and be like, I'm the main man. And everyone's like, yep, sound.
Yeah, they're like, no one's got any qualms with that. Do you know what I mean? But talking of Ronaldo...
Segue galore, man. Great.
But we're like, where do you reckon he might be going? Because apparently his agent, I think it might be Mino Raiola. Fat cunt. Cut that out. Sorry, Jim's mum. Yeah, man, 25 million. He reckons he might be getting him out there for
25 mil.
That's apparently the. I've read that somewhere. That's as I say. There's so much like bollocks out there, and they're like football bollocks.
Well, wouldn't you? If you're Ronaldo, wouldn't you rather stay in Italy, have a nice little add to your trophy cabinet, or go somewhere like PSG, where it's just you know.
Imagine PSG, like Neymar. Like imagine they have to drop one of Neymar, Messi, Ronaldo, Di Maria. Who's the other one? Mbappe.
You don't have to drop anyone. You'd
find play them all.
Yeah, play them all. Why?
Play Ronaldo centre mid. Play Messi centre back.
Yeah, just have eight up front or something like that. If you're Ronaldo, would you want to leave Juve? Not really. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Why?
Because this is the problem. This is the issue I had with Messi. Which I spoke about legacy, man. Like he's gonna have. They're gonna. Both of them are gonna have fantastic legacies moving on. But Messi's is dampened slightly. He should.
I still don't buy into this.
He should have moved. He should have moved to somewhere in the Premier League and done something like unbelievable. He should have tried it, man. You know, I don't rate it. He's took the easy way out, man.
The easy way out.
No. Ronaldo, if he went back to United, that would be incredible. Can you imagine Old Trafford, Ronaldo being back at United?
I could see him going to United. Nah, I think United would be probably in the best position to sign him. As we've already said, City have blown loads of money. Chelsea, they've got their striker and they don't need him. Liverpool are pretty much back to full force now, so they're not going to be making any big money signings. Who else?
Because who have United got? Cavani. So, you know, obviously...
Yeah, Greenwood as well. But
they're more wide players, aren't they? They're best off in the wide areas like Greenwood and Rashford. And obviously they've got Jadon Sancho. I don't think... Did he play against...
He came on. Sub, yeah.
And obviously... Having Ronaldo back there, just play him as the big man up top.
He's always going to be the big man.
I'd watch United games, like, you know, just to see him back
on the
Old Trafford pitch.
To watch him stand in wide leg stance.
30 yards out, 32 yards out.
He just puts it into the stands, but everyone's gasping. It always happens.
It's 9 times out of 10, it goes. That's where it goes. But just for that one time, he's going to put it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Classic, you know what I mean?
Classic. He's back. He's still at the clock.
And what, that'd just be a... I say, the Premier League doesn't need really any adverts, but man, like, they're everyone in the world will be watching the Premier League. It's a shame, man. It's a shame that Messi and Ronaldo did not come to the Premier League and might not ever play in the Premier League.
Sports science, isn't it? They're probably going to extend their careers by a few more years than...
Financial science, more like, man.
Yeah.
The richest team in the world.
Yeah, true, true.
Owned by, like, Qatari sheikhs or whatever.
Shake, rattle and roll.
Alright, so we'll move on from the... it's quiz time, isn't it? Starting off with the boxing question. Fuck's sake.
It's current, though. Everything on here is pretty current. One of them's a stretch just for you, innit? But, okay. Are you ready?
I am ready. Go for it.
Okay. Manny Pacquiao defends his WBA title on Saturday. He became the oldest welterweight champion in history when he won the title age 40 in 2019 against Keith Thurman. But can you tell me who the oldest world champion of all time is?
Right, so is this in the welterweight? Of all time. Yeah.
You definitely know who this guy is.
Is it a heavyweight? I guess it's a heavyweight.
Do you want to give the weight class that he won it at?
Go on.
Light heavyweight.
Light heavyweight. I'm thinking early 40s, so I'm going to go...
Nah, it's pretty much last 10 years.
No, I mean, 42.
He was the age.
Yeah.
46 he was.
Fucking hell, you're
out of time. Oh, you're out of time, mate. Do you want to know now or do you want to know at the end? Do you want to know now?
Yeah, tell me.
Bernard Hopkins.
Okay, 46.
46 years old. In 2011, he beat a 28-year-old Jean Pascal for the light heavyweight title.
No way.
So you can have that one for your back pocket. Bernard Hopkins, don't forget his name. Are you ready for question number two?
So I need to get this or else, like...
Well, we're going to do a league of sorts, aren't we? So don't...
Yeah, so... You're going to get 3 points.
It's all right, So, on this day, today, in 2018... So this is a nice little current one for you, and it's my closet subject as well. So, at the Cincinnati Open this week, Naomi Osaka had her latest meltdown. But who was the first player to win all Masters 1000 tournaments since the series started in 1990?
Who was the first player to win all Masters 1000 tournaments?
Yeah, there's 9 of them per year. And who was the first to win all of them?
Male or female?
Male. Remember 1990, he's pretty modern. He's one of the big boys. He's one of the big boys. The usual suspects.
Rafael Nadal.
It's going to be one of three. Won it? Novak Djokovic. And he did it in 2018. Oh, unlucky, unlucky, unlucky. This next one I think you should get. I think this is the easiest one of the list.
What a fucking Grand Prix question. I got no chance.
Now you will. And there's a bonus point option here as well. Lewis Hamilton leads the constructor standings by 8 points ahead of the Belgian Grand Prix next weekend. If he wins this year's title, who will he overtake for most constructors' wins of all time? And for a bonus point, how many titles will that bring him to?
So Michael Schumacher.
Yes, ding, ding, ding. First point on the board.
So bonus point, how many titles will that bring Lewis Hamilton
yes,
to?
Yeah.
17?
I'll give you another bite of the cherry. There's a little clue in the question.
9.
Ah, it's 8.
Oh,
Oh, shit.
I was thinking like...
Yeah. I don't know what you mean.
I don't know. I like one more than Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, funny. Oh, that is hilarious. Okay, so here's one.
So I'm on one.
You're on one.
Yeah, at least I didn't get on zero.
So here's one just for you. The Chicago Bears beat the Miami Dolphins 2013 in preseason last Saturday. But in which 1994 comedy film did the Dolphins heavily feature, where their team mascot, Snowflake the Dolphin, is kidnapped and held ransom?
1994 was a good year for films.
Yeah, and this is, you definitely 100% know this film.
Fiction. comedy film. See, the first thing that came to my head was Sudden Death. Because that was ice hockey in ice hockey arena.
13 seconds left.
Snowflake the Dolphin. Give me a clue.
Jim Carrey.
Nah, it's gone.
Oh, come on, son. Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
No way.
It's all about the dolphin.
It's about a dolphin, isn't it? Yeah.
And Dan Marino makes a cameo appearance.
Dan Marino, yeah.
Son, I tried to link in your team there, but what can you do? One point from four. Or 1 point from potential five so far.
Shocking.
Okay, maybe. I'm thinking, just to get your score up, I might change the scoring criteria here in the last one. I might give you a point for every name you can give me.
All right.
Okay, so Bruno Fernandes opened his account for the season with a hat-trick on the opening day this year. He became the 10th player ever to do it. Can you name three of the others? And I'll give you a point for everyone you can name. Go.
Alan Shearer.
Nope.
Thierry Henry.
Nope.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Nope.
Just in the Premier League. Ian Wright.
Nope.
Romelu Lukaku?
Nope.
Ryan Giggs?
Nope.
Harry Kane?
Nope.
Luis Suarez?
Nope.
That's good. Give me another 30 seconds.
I'll give you another 30. Go on.
Fucking hell. Chris Sutton?
No, but you're getting along the right lines. It's those type of players, isn't it? Yeah. There's a couple of modern ones in there, but...
Holy... fucking hell. Mine's gone blank now. I thought at least one of them would...
Think Chelsea. Winner in the Champions League.
Didier Drogba.
Nice, 1 point.
The Pharaoh. Mark Lowen.
No.
Robbie Fowler.
No. Think the Pharaoh. Still plays now.
Mo Salah.
Yep. That's two. Ooh, well past this now. You've had like 15 minutes. Yeah. We'll give you two for that. Do you want to hear the full list?
Go on.
Bruno Fernandes, notwithstanding. Mickey Quinn. Matt Letizia.
Ah.
Kevin Campbell. Fabrizio Ravanelli. Dion Dublin.
Oh, fucking hell, yeah.
Gabriel Abang-Nahor. Didier Drogba. Raheem Sterling. And Mo Salah.
That was pretty hard.
That was pretty hard.
There's some interesting ones in there.
What do you think about the difficulty level?
I thought my difficulty level was... Like up there last week, but I clearly wasn't.
I did guess a few of them though.
To be fair,
in all fairness, so
I don't know if I was leading you down a few of them, but
so we'll say you got two of those, and then you got is there 3 points.
It's a loss, man. It's a loss. You win. You've won. You got 3 points on the table.
Lovely.
Goal differential of about 7. So you're significantly in the lead, and I'm pretty disgusted in myself. Really.
Well. I can always lower the difficulty. I'll put you on semi-pro difficulty next week. I think what are we on next? Should we move to the combat sports? After that shocking defeat on your part?
Ignominious defeat.
Ignominious, great words.
I love it. At least once a week.
Well, we'll start with the boxing review from last week, shall we? With Casemiro's split decision win against Guillermo Rigondeaux for the WBO bantamweight title. Now, you saw a few images of this fight. What did you think?
A few images popped up on Twitter and it looked like... What's his name? Rigondeaux.
Rigondeaux, yeah.
He looked like he was literally running away from Casemiro with his back turned like a couple of times. Like, do you know what I mean? Literally running around the ring.
People think... he states his age is 40. And people in boxing think he's closer to 50.
Cuban nerves.
So, what he was able to do against the younger man, the power puncher, the aggressor, it was astounding, really. It was a self-defense masterclass, but it was an absolute snooze fest to watch. Rigo, I'm not sure where this puts him in terms of getting more titles. He's pretty difficult to beat. There's only Lomachenko who's beaten before this. And this fight was so close that he could have went either way. I had two even rounds in my scorecard. I had it 116, 114, Casemiro. But that was... one punch per round.
Couldn't separate it.
Yeah, it was like, it was really, really difficult. And that's usually not the type of fight you get out of Casemiro, who after the fight called out Nonito Donaire Anoa'i Inoue. He's already chinned Zolani Tete. He's looking like a bit of a beast at bantamweight, so fair play to him. I'll be watching his next fight with more anticipation than I had for this, but fair play to Rigo as well, doing it at 65 years old. Absolutely skating around the ring. A more entertaining fight was on, I think it was on DAZN, where Virgil Ortiz Jr. KO'd Egidius Kavaliauskas.
How many times have you practiced that?
I know the last name anyway, but Egidius, or Egis? Is that Egis?
Egregious.
Egregious is fucking right.
Egregious Kavaliauskas.
But yeah, he had his 18th straight KO to bring him up into the title picture at welterweight. So this was a pretty good performance for Ortiz Jr. He's already beat Maurice Hooker by a knockout. And Kavaliauskas, he's a known puncher. He beat that David Avanesian who showed Josh Kelly levels a few years ago. And he, in turn...
months ago. Well, that one years ago, was it?
Yeah, it was last year, wasn't it, I think. Was it earlier this year? Oh, it must have been for the podcast.
Yeah.
So Kavaliauskas is a known puncher. And he had Ortiz hurt in the second. So Ortiz has overcome a potential knockdown. He touched down for me, but they didn't call it. And then he's come back and just hammered the life out of Kavaliauskas. He's got a lot of flaws, Ortiz, but I feel like his momentum and his aggression and his durability at this early stage in his career are really going to serve him well. And he was talking about fighting Terence Crawford afterwards. Crawford's only got one fight left on his top rank deal. And if he moves over to either DAZN or the PBC, he's got more options. Cause, you know, he's had a really frustrating latter part of his career, basically fighting since he unified at 140, which wasn't a glittering division anyway. Really underwhelming matchups, and you can see now the holes are starting to appear as he gets older. Like Kavaliauskas shouldn't have been able to touch him, but he hurt him really bad in that fight. And I just hope we get to see him in some of those trademark super fights before his career has ended, because he deserved the payday. So that was like top level boxing, but we had another fight camp card in Eddie's back garden. So with Joshua Buatsi, he stopped Rickard Bolotniks in the 11th round. I'm unsure about Buatsi. He's linked up with Virgil Hunter, who's Andre Ward's old trainer, defensive master. He's seen as this kind of like pensive, contemplative, look after you. Like everything's got to be correct. Like Amir Khan went to him when he was kept getting chinned by everyone.
Is he the geezer that was flipping burgers and now he's flipping people's heads?
No.
What's he?
No, that was that? Akoli.
Akoli.
The sauce, the big sauce, Akoli. But what's he for me? He's got... If he's after, he needs to tighten up his defences. There's no two ways about that. Bolotniks, he's a nice European level type fighter, but no noted puncher. And he kept finding the right hand over and over again. But Buatsi's just there to be hit. And you wouldn't expect that from someone with his amateur pedigree. And he's not that young now either. He's like 28, 29. He hasn't won a British title. Hasn't won a European title.
Yeah, I feel like his name hasn't really been bandied around as much as it was sort of like in his earlier days. I do remember like the name Buatsi sort of being out there in the ether as sort of like, you know, not the next big thing, but like certainly...
Potentially.
But certainly a name to sort of keep an eye on. Do you know what I mean?
But I think in all fairness to Buatsi and to Eddie Hearn, I think a lot of the light heavyweight prospects... domestically, are with Frank Warren. So guys like Lyndon Arthur, Anthony Yard, they're all with Frank Warren. And that's the kind of guys you'd be looking to fight British European level. So I think the politics of boxing,
nerves again,
is getting in the way of things. But I also think Buatsi has been underwhelming, even though the knockout itself was pretty impressive. A lot of people think he's got a bad chin. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with Buatsi's chin. The fight he had last time against that Mexican lad, he took a drubbing. I think he was really... fortunate to come out with a decision on that one. So there's nothing wrong with his beard, but
he's still undefeated.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's like 15-0 now, something like that. So on the undercard, Joe Cordino, he had an impressive first round KO over Joshua Hernandez. He was fainting, kind of fainting to the body, jabbed to the head, and you could just see he was looking for this, just find his way through the defences really, and he landed right on the chin and just put him on his ass.
I quite like that idea, you know, the idea of boxing using feints. I think that's like when we was watching that Rose, I mean, I know different sport, but the way she was like, she came out and against Zhang Weili and she was sort of like fainting into certain areas, getting sort of like getting her opponent to basically think, right, that's coming, that's coming, that's coming, and then you switch it up somewhere. Very clever tactics, man.
That's the chess movement. I was looking into the kind of contextual situation behind this fight. It's impossible to criticise Cordina's performance, but there is some classic slimy head fuckery going on here. So the DAZN commentators talked about Cordina moving down from lightweight to super featherweight for the opportunities at that division. And it is stacked down there. We're talking Gervonta Davis, Miguel Bichel, Shavkat Rakhimov. And look, they're all killers, man. Cordina's only made the super featherweight limit once, and he's now ranked number 6 by the IBF. You don't have to make championship weight in non-title bouts. I completely understand that. But how can the IBF rank Cordina above Tevin Farmer, who was the champion at that weight before his last fight?
How do the IBF go about, you know, conjuring up these rankings? Like, is it just like 5 gazers on a panel that are just say like, oh, he's good?
It's supposed to be results-based, which it clearly isn't.
Isn't? It can't be. So because how does a champion not come above?
Tevin Farmer was the... It's not even just like for the WBO, WBA or something like that. He was the IBF's champion. He only lost it in his last fight, and now he's ranked 7th. And Cordina's ranked number 6.
And how often do they update these rankings?
Quite often, I think. Like, it just depends on whoever pays their sanctioning fees. Really.
They should do something similar in golf. Like, I think they only update the rankings every, like, 2 years. So even if... sort of like you've just won the Masters or whatever, you wouldn't like immediately jump up to being considered the best golfer in the world. I think it was like, it was Dustin Johnson who's not had a great sort of like season, but like he's still number ranking. 1 in it. Yeah. He's still got the ranking because of his sort of like previous efforts. And then John Rahm will go to 1, but then if he doesn't do anything for 2 years, he'll still be there for at least 2 years. I feel like they need a little bit of a longer period. So it's just fairer on the fighters, I think. Yeah.
Or they can just pay for the privilege with the IBF. I mean, it's no... Look, Frank Warren's got the WBO sewn up. All his fighters go the WBO route. All of Eddie's fighters go either the IBF or the WBA route. And it's just sanctioning fees. It's basically pay us and we'll put you up there. It's just dead. Absolutely dead. Cordina fought well. Highlight real knockout. I don't want to criticise him, because obviously he's going to be moved towards a title. And that's, you know, everyone's ambition. Bigger paydays, all the prestige, lifelong dreams, all that stuff. But it just undermines him as a fighter to be pushed up by that because he's a promoter. So he's not going to stop anytime soon. I should just stop mentioning it, really.
Yeah, does it come down to your sort of like, your PR appeal? Do you know what I mean?
Pretty much, yeah. He's a good-looking kid from Wales. You can just start talking about Joe Calzaghe and start packing out stadium, kind of. It's just one of them, isn't it? But from mixed martial arts last weekend, Rory McDonald suffers a second straight loss in the PFL to Ray Cooper III, who looked like Blanka from Street Fighter, man. Just a Native American version. Just out-wrestled him, out-hustled him, dragged him to the ground. McDonald applauded him at the end and just said, like, fair play, innit? In Bellator, Gegard Mousasi defended his middleweight title with a third-round TKO over John Salter. Salter came in trying to wrestle with the smooth transitional takedown attacks, but Mousasi had the solid defense and began to read his rhythm pretty early. He was getting his hips back as soon as the attacks were beginning, started to turn him against the fence where he found a dominant position in Salter's open guard. He ended up holding him down with one hand and punching him in the face to the other until the ref stopped him. But yeah, so that was all the MMA from last week, and the preview for next week is sad news for me, but also a little bit of a relief. Manny Pacquiao versus Errol Spence Jr. is off. Errol Spence suffered a torn retina in training. I don't know if this is residual damage from that car crash he was in, but your Dennis Ugas steps in as the late replacement, and I think Pacquiao has now got a much better chance of winning this fight than he would have had against Spence, because Spence is an absolute monster. He just takes people apart. He's basically a middleweight fighting at welterweight and bashing people up. Pacquiao is now 42 years old.
I was literally just looking at his age, and I was thinking, Pacquiao.
All-time legend. But honestly, this, I think he would have came a cropper against Spence. And now against Ugas, who's much older than Spence, not as high a quality. He's got a couple of losses on his record. He lost to Sean Porter back in 2019. I just think he presents a much more manageable task as an opponent.
Why does Pacquiao still want to be in the ring?
I imagine it's for the dough.
Has to be, isn't it?
Must be.
But you can't be short of dough. Like, you know what I mean?
Have you seen the videos of Pacquiao when he goes home after he wins his fights? He's pretty much on some Jesus shit. Like, he stands there, him and his boys stand there, and then people, like I'm talking thousands of people, come from all around, and then he just hands them money. It's documented, that's what he does. So, obviously, he's got his senatorial position in the Philippines, probably nailed on to be the president there someday. I think it's just income, and also I think he's interested in preserving his legacy as well. Like, he's been speaking lately about he wouldn't do these one-off joke fights that Mayweather does. He's fighting proper contender. Even Ugas is a proper contender. He's not as good as Spence. Nowhere near. But he's still a respectable opponent.
Could he beat Spence though? What, Spence, the early 30s? Like,
Spence is
looks
like
in great shape.
30-odd. To be fair, I had the same hesitation before the Keith Thurman fight 2 years ago. And Pacquiao pulled off an astounding performance given the circumstances. He could have done that against Spence. But Spence is a different kettle of fish. And I think if you're going against a power puncher like that, but then again, Pacquiao, he's always a smaller man. He's like kind of Tyson was a smaller heavyweight, but he used his height to his advantage. Pacquiao's very much like that. It's all just a question of age, isn't it? But for me, he's one of the all-time greats. Definite favourite fighter of all time, hands down. And I just want to see him fight as many times as possible, really, without getting actually hurt against someone like Spence. So one to watch on the undercard there, Victor Ortiz and Robert Guerrero. That could be a good one. Two age veterans, both of them aggressive with leaky defences at the best of times. But I'd back Guerrero in that one because Victor Ortiz has got previous, he's jacking it in when it gets a bit hard in there. Which I don't blame him, you know what I mean? Getting punched in the face. The first one would do me in, so sounds. And the preview for this week's MMA, it's the UFC on ESPN 29 this Saturday. Headlined by Jared Cannonier versus Kelvin Gastelum at middleweight. Now, both of these boys lost to Robert Whittaker last time out, and he's about to go on and fight Israel Adesanya in a rematch for the middleweight title. He's levels here, so there's no shame there. Gastelum's skidding hard, though. One win in four, and that's over Ian Heinisch, who's not really anything in terms of the wider title picture.
So Adesanya's sort of getting back to business after that loss against light heavyweight.
He beat Vittori last time out, and now he's staying regular. That's what I like about Adesanya. He fights regular. But Gastelum, he pushed Adesanya as close as he's ever been pushed, apart from that Jan Blachowicz fight. He's lost to Darren Till in a close one, and then to the aforementioned Whitaker as well. Cannonier, I'm still not sure how to say his name. Cannonier.
Looks about right.
Yeah. He was on a hot run before his loss to Whitaker, but he'd only beaten people like an older Anderson Silva, Jack Hermanson, David Branch. You know, these are like middle-of-the-road type guys. He's also lost to Jan Blachowicz and Dominic Reyes, respectively. He's 37. He's fighting at middleweight now, but he used to be a heavyweight. So he's trimmed down like 40 pounds of extra fat or something.
It's impressive in
itself,
isn't it?
But this is number three versus number seven, I think, in the rankings. But it's difficult to say because Cannonier is really like a heavy hitter. But I'm not sure if he's going to have the speed and the kind of agility to deal with Gastelum. Because Gastelum's kind of like a really smooth boxer at times. But I think I'm going to go with... I think I'm going to go with Gastelum, just for his age and the fact that he blazes bare as well. He should probably be at welterweight. Like, he's a bit fat, to be fair. Like, he shouldn't really be up there with those big boys fighting former heavyweights. But, yeah, that should be a good one. I think that'll be all right, man. And then I think that's it.
Yeah, so it seems to be, like, quite a bit of sort of combat sports to look out for.
Well, the main thing I'm going to be watching on Sunday is Manny Pacquiao. And I want to see a crowning glory performance from the man. Because people... talk about fighters from the 40s and like the 50s and the 60s and like, oh, Ali did this and Roberto Duran did that, and Pacquiao is one of them fighters. He deserves to be considered in that ilk, in that branch, in the pantheon of all time, as man, he really does. His resume is just ridiculous. I only knew about him for the first time when he fought Oscar De La Hoya, and I think he'd only just turned 30 at that point or something like that. And that was his first fight at welterweight. His run at welterweight is ridiculous. And then what he's done since then, like going up and down, back to welterweight. And then you look what he did at super bantam, featherweight, lightweight, Eric Morales, Barrera.
So he just scythed through all those weight categories straight up.
And then obviously Mayweather scored him up, and Mayweather fans will look at that and say, look, he's the superior fighter. And there's a legitimate argument there to be had. But I also think that you can't really argue with Pacquiao's body of work at all. I think he's got the much better resume than Mayweather. But that's just, obviously I'm biased on it. So.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, that's thank you very much for listening. Make sure we're going to get on the, back on the socials, man, because I need to pull my finger out of my ass and start doing a little bit more on it. You know what I mean?
Get back on the socials. It's all sweet. You won't find us there, but it'll be all right.
Yeah. Yeah, follow us, but I'll be doing nothing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely nothing.
All right, nice one, man.
A pleasure as always, sir.
Yep. See you next week.